Hi, Simon Sharwood here. I'm APAC editor of The Register. Well, we all know that Australia has a federal election on September 7th. And that means that lobby groups and political parties are in our ears and in our inboxes trying to get us to swallow their arguments and ideas whole. Well, that's not The Register's way. We thought we'd instead ask some very influential users what they think are the big issues facing IT professionals and IT businesses in this election. So, let's roll tape, introduce you to our guests, and have a chat about the policies and issues they feel matter most to IT professionals in this election.
G'day, I'm Tristan Good. I'm CEO of a Sydney-based company called Aptera that deals with cloud computing. I'm the founder and lead organiser of the Australian OpenStack User Group and a supporter of the Indian OpenStack User Group. And I'm also a member of the Board of Directors for the OpenStack Foundation.
And here's our exotic and exciting second guest.
I like exotic, Simon. That's good. So my name's Craig Waters. I have many hats. I'm currently a senior systems engineer for a company called Nutanix. I'm also the leader of the Melbourne VMware User Group. And I also do a couple of my own podcasts as well. So I've been working with the APAC Virtualization Roundtable podcast, hosting that recently. And I've also got my own theme of podcast called VCatchUp, where I just interview general people in the virtualization industry. So thanks for having me on today, Simon. I appreciate it.
No, great to have you both. So, look, let's start with you, Tristan. You're a representative of users through the OpenStack User Group, but you're also a business owner. With that second hat on, what are you interested in this election?
Mostly the same as I'm interested in most elections, with a Bozo 1 or Bozo 2 will get in. I'm probably the worst person to speak to about politics and things, but I guess looking at things at the moment, I mean, there's two things that stand out to me and I hope we can get the best of whatever comes out of in both of them. One is the NBN, or what the NBN might turn out to be. Second is taxation around employee share schemes and that sort of thing. It's incredibly difficult, and I see this right across complaints in the user group and not just in my business as well, but about how we can incentivize employees.
Okay, now look, I know that Richard Chergwin, who's also from The Reg, who's here with us, wonders if it's always entirely appropriate for people to go to work for a script that may not have enduring value. How do you feel about that, Tristan? And perhaps you as well, Craig. How does share options figure in your assessment of remuneration package?
I think probably for an organisation that is just starting out, it's probably one of the only ways that you can really provide any sort of long-term retention of staff. You know, like, you haven't got the cash up front to be able to pay for the big, you know, the big boys in town sort of thing. So often what companies do is say, well, here's a piece of the company. And then it's an incentive piece then to the individual to say, well, okay, if I make a really good go of this and it goes somewhere, then, hey, I'm going to have quite a bit of cash out of it. So I think it's critical. I mean, what else can a small business offer, you know, if you want, like, say, some of the big wigs in town to actually come and work for you?
Yeah, that's my sentiments exactly.
So, and this is Richard Chergwin chiming in here. So we should look, in looking at that policy, you would say it's sensible to treat two angles of employee share schemes differently. If we're talking about the ESS being in addition to the salary available to be paid, then that is saying, okay, you work for me for 50 grand a year instead of 80, and if it all works out, you'll catch up later. But I guess as a bit of an old timer, the other way that those were used and abused back in the previous bubble, the one that bust in 2001, was that it was instead, we'll give you a huge bunch of employee share schemes and a real pittance of pay. Do you see the distinction? One of them is additive and one of them is just an excuse to take away.
Yeah, I can see that, but we certainly haven't encountered that situation. In our business, we still have to pay people fairly substantial rates just to get them to come. And because the lure of this sort of work is, and that sort of incentive is so strong from overseas, it's very difficult to stop people just going off to work in the United States, for example, because of their incentives are so much easier to provide over there. So,
is that something you gents kind of hear when you're at user group meetings, that people would rather go and chase the potential bigger payday in the USA, or is it attractive
absolutely
to move to Silicon Valley or wherever in the States because of better
absolutely
malls?
There's people who have already left our user group and gone to work because of the nature of the software that we're working mainly with. OpenStack is global and is far more advanced in its adoption in the States. There's a huge demand worldwide for people. So people are going to go, especially because a lot of the people working on this are younger people in their 20s, and they have that flexibility to be able to just up and go somewhere. So
yeah,
I think
that's probably the key point, isn't it? Sorry, I think that's probably the key point is where you are, where you are in your life sort of thing, and you've got that opportunity to go and, go overseas and do something new. I mean, it's an exciting component to that as well. But it's a shame, it's unfortunate that, the legalities in the country dictate that you have to go overseas to actually go and, earn a decent wage sort of thing. Is that where the whole brain drain thing came from for Australia originally then, like the idea of it being around government legislation to determine what you can actually earn and how you can earn it?
Oh, look, I think the history of industrial relations and wage setting in Australia is so long and so labyrinthine suffice to say, Audacity says we've got 484 hours of disk space remaining here, and we'd probably burn that out if we explored that subject. But I'm kind of keen to explore, one of the big issues that we keep hearing about in this election campaign is cost of living pressures. When you guys see colleagues or user group members head to America or head wherever else, is cost of living a factor?
I could say it in reverse. I mean, I came over here in 2001, and from an outsider looking in, the change in cost of living in 12 years has been astronomical. I've got relatives from the UK who won't come and see me in Melbourne, Australia, than it is back in the UK. And, the UK is supposed to be pretty expensive as it is, but it doesn't compare to, the eastern side of Australia. So, I guess that shows you something.
Yeah. I mean, we keep hearing there's a skills shortage across the IT industry. Do you think that cost of living is something that bites IT workers as well as the rest of the population?
I'm looking at our staff. I mean, we've got quite a few of the staff are young and renting, and I kind of feel sorry for them because they've got that big step to get to anything in Sydney here, to get to own anything. It's sort of it must factor in some way in their thinking about where they work, but
I think it's been a classic, with the Australian Computer Society saying for a long time about this IT skills shortage. I mean, for one, I went through the immigration process probably about 7 years ago, something like that. And I think today, if I was trying to go through it, I probably wouldn't be able to do it just because of the constraints that have changed. So
is that the 457 visa changes?
Yeah. So that's how I came into Australia originally. I don't think I'll be able to do that today.
It must be incredibly daunting for someone who's an immigrant to see the rental prices and things like that in Sydney and Melbourne.
So look, let's Let's pivot from that then, really? and look at education. I mean, scarcely a day's going past in this election campaign without somebody announcing a skills package of one sort or another. Tristan, I mean, you know, you're an employer. You want to be able to provide jobs for Australian IT pros. How easy or hard is it for you to do that in the current climate? And do you see the election making a difference?
I don't see the election making any difference whatsoever. I mean, they just never seem to. And I've been through a few now, so in the game for 25 years. So, and nothing seems to really change. And if anything, things don't seem to improve. I mean, you know, we do need better incentive. We do need better backing for R&D, or make it easier for us to do R&D in this country. Make it easy for us to reverse this brain drain.
What could you?
I know we're talking about IT specifically, but there's other areas as well where it's key.
Yeah. Tristan, what would you like to be able to do with your business and for your customers that you struggle to do today because you can't attract or retain people?
There's a shortage of people dealing with the technology that I'm dealing with at the moment, and I look at things like, you know, the government developing cloud computing policies and things like that. Now, New Zealand have just been through this and have developed a policy that we could quite probably base an Australian cloud computing policy on. Now, are we going to do that, or is the government going to say, no, we need our own? Now, what's the point of that? The whole duplication of effort, to me, stinks. Do we need a New South Wales cloud computing policy, and then we need a Victorian cloud computing policy? I mean, all this is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And all that just makes it very confusing to do business, especially in cloud, where you're working across state borders. And across national borders, so...
Okay. Well, I see the interest in devolved models, but we've also got here in Australia. This is one of my dodgy segues. A national broadband network under construction, but with an alternative model on the table. Craig, how do you feel about the two NBN alternatives?
I think they kind of missed the point, you know, because it's really that. It's really the change that was made around the fiber to the home and the last 100 metres, I guess you'd call it, from the exchange to the house itself. And I think that's kind of what cripples the country right now. I mean, you know, me being in the, I'll give my example. So right now my phone with the LTE with 4G is actually faster than my home internet. I'm in Williamstown, which is one of the earliest suburbs to be formed. Our copper infrastructure is like, I don't know, 60 years old, probably something stupid like that. To me, like, you know, the NBN's, you know, just from being a home user, something like the NBN's critical.
Tristan, like, what do you think about the competing NBN policies?
Copper? Since I've lived in this area and I've had DSL connections from various providers, all actually coming out of the same bit of copper. The amount of times I've lost my connection and gone for a walk up the road to find some bloke working in a pit with a tangled mess of wires in front of him, and asked him, would he mind reconnecting my ADSL? And miraculously, by the time I get home, it's working again. I really have greater concerns about using any of that network.
And we won't mention the rain either, right?
It's a broadband solution.
Yeah, mine goes when it rains, when I get really heavy rain.
Oh, yeah.
It goes down, yeah. You know, I mean, come on, this is the 21st century, you know, with my jetpack, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, right, when it rains, definitely. I mean, like, you can sit here, it's just so frustrating. Sitting here in the evening and you've had a big downpour of rain during the day and the rain drops.
What do you think it does for cloud adoption? Having that experience,
it's a complete barrier. Of course, it is. You try and sell a virtual desktop solution to a business, and all they're worried about is what happens when our connection drops out. It's just a given that they know their connection's going to drop out, and the standard answer is jump on your phone, tether your phone and do it on your 3G or your 4G, and you can get back on. But
for something like VDI, which is pretty bursty, that's not good enough.
Well, the thing is, I can see some reticence or point in the reticence to putting fiber out to all the homes. But then again, I can see that we probably haven't really discovered what the potential of that is.
I think that's a really good point, because I feel like entrepreneurs will imagine the possible and they'll push the limits. But for 10 years, local entrepreneurs have had to imagine the possible on XDSL. And I'm kind of wondering, what clever folks will dream up to do with, a solid 100 meg or with a solid gig into every home.
Or beyond. There's certainly things that are going to arise that we've never considered. Distributed X, whatever that may be. Who knows? It's
going to
be interesting.
Okay, now, something that's going to happen in the next term of government is we're going to start to have a look at tech companies' taxation practices. What do you gents think needs to happen or ought to happen there, Craig?
Because it happens throughout the world. It's not just an Australian thing. I was noticing, I think it was Starbucks or Amazon or something like that talking about their profits and then how much they actually paid in country for their profits. How do you enforce that, though? The problem these days is that private enterprise has as much power as local government. And in some instances, when that private enterprise has a global representation, it can actually have more power than government, which I think we've seen in a few.
So what would you like to happen in the next term of government?
Well, you could kind of use it in a similar vein as to what's happening with the mining industry right now, where all these profits are being pulled out of the country and being sent somewhere else, and somebody else is gaining the benefit for it.
What I would like to see is whichever government gets in to have some spine and say to these people, you're going to pay tax here. If they can do this with people that put businesses in the Cook Islands and Vanuatu and wherever else, and bring down people like Bond Corporation and these people in history that have had shady practices by moving tax. And now these guys are probably operating within the law.
Yeah.
In any way morally. If you're doing business in this country, you pay tax in this country. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Otherwise, all of us have to subsidise these guys. And I don't like that. I'm fed up with that.
That was the point I was exactly going to say, was that the problem is that if they don't, then we will. And that's kind of the issue, is that the government still needs an income to be able to provide public service and stuff. So where are they going to get it from the consumers or from other other areas? That's kind of the issue that we see a lot right now, isn't it? Is if on the carbon pricing is a good example of that, where everybody just passed on the dollar to the cost to the consumer, to the person, to the majority of people who are actually using the service.
Yeah, I think that's why company tax rates are so high here. Because Singapore, the company tax rate is so far less. Because we are subsidising these people that go to Singapore.
We've also got all sorts of peculiar issues that come with having an enormous land mass that add cost to our operations. But universal service obligations for telecommunications.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so look, give us a vision here, Tristan. What kind of policy, what kind of technology policy would get you, out of your seat, cheering and saying, yes, I'm voting for that party?
Oh dear.
And you know, let's think about this from the members' point of view as well. What would it take to get everyone at a OpenStack user group on their feet and cheering and saying, "Now I know who to vote for and I'm happy about it."
Get behind local business. You know, if we're going to do this cloud computing policy, make it so that it's discriminatory towards overseas-based companies like Amazon and Azure and Google, so that we encourage local business growth. That would be a big plus for me.
Craig, what about you? What do you reckon would get a VMUG cheering?
Yeah, mine's not going to be as grand, but free Wi-Fi everywhere. So free Wi-Fi in capital cities, free Wi-Fi at airports, free Wi-Fi on trains, why not, eh? And then that way we can all continue to do our business in these places instead of getting gouged by using Wi-Fi access in airports and so on and so forth. And then it's also good for people who are coming into the country straight away. That's a productivity piece, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I agree it's a productivity piece. I reckon the telcos would scream blue murder, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but look, any way the spineless fluffing that both the major parties go on with all the time and don't really, we need fundamental reforms in taxation and business and things like that. Like, what? I mean, that's brilliant. Free Wi-Fi would make it easy for people that are coming as visitors to this country. I mean, how difficult is it when you go overseas and you've got to go on a roaming plan? You can't find your way around anyway because you can't use your phone because the data charges will cost you more than your house by the time you get back.
I sometimes think back to what happened when I went backpacking 25 years ago, and it was land in town, acquire map, figure out where north was, get moving. And when I travel these days, it's I can't get Wi-Fi, I can't find my way to a restaurant 100 metres around the corner. I do wonder if we've gone a bit soft in some ways.
But I think it's just our idea of being connected all the time, isn't it? You know what you've got, especially with the advent of things like social media and stuff, where communication to people that you wouldn't communicate with normally. Yeah. It very much then becomes a global piece as well. You know, I often talk to people in the US, people in Europe, who I'd never talk to normally, unless these tools are available to use. Yeah?
And that network effect is really, really powerful. But I was shown yesterday a brochure for a holiday destination called Lord Howe Island, and it's now marketing itself as the place your mobile phone won't work.
Norfolk Island was doing that for a while. They caved a few years ago. We used to have a business relationship with Norfolk a while ago. It was their internet connectivity and things over there, and it was hell going over there for a week with no mobile. Even 10 years ago when we were doing it, so. Yeah, I didn't like that at all. It's nice to have the option to turn it on. I like to turn mine off and turn it on, but it is nice to have the option to turn it on. It's become a fundamental part of our communication these days.
Yeah, well, Norfolk Island was settled in order to provide hell for the worst of the worst of the prisoners. So it's come back again. Okay, gents, look, last calls here. What's the issue that will swing your vote and why, Tristan?
Making it easier for companies to operate here and grow here. If I can see some clear direction on that would sway my vote because we're going through funding rounds at the moment, and getting money in this country is incredibly difficult. So anything towards the real growth of Australian owned and operated and seeded business so that we can actually employ people here and not have to look offshore would make a big difference to me. So there's a couple of factors.
And compulsory OpenStack in government?
Of course.
And Craig?
Pretty much the same, really. I think one thing I would like to say is I'd like to see Hollywood buy the rights to the Kevin Rudd story, because I think it's unheard of that a politician appeals, it gets rejected, and then finally gets back in for another term potentially. So I think it could only happen in Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah. So he played Kevin Rudd. He played Julia Gillard.
I don't know, but I can imagine it now, you know. This summer, a tale of backstabbing and intrigue at the bottom of the world. I don't know, Kevin Spacey as Kevin Rudd, and I don't know. Oh, Meryl Streep. It's got to be Meryl Streep for Julia Gillard, because she could pull off the transformation.
Tax reform, I think, is a really important part. And this whole idea about who governs what, you know, where policies originate from, and then how they're overlaid across the countries, you know, it's just common sense that we need to get those sort of things right. So,
yeah. Okay, gents, thank you very, very much for your time today, and happy voting.